Hello and welcome to episode 345 of the Mark and Me podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark. Now today, I think might be a first for Mark and Me. I'm joined by a comedian stroke actor, and I don't think I've had that on Mark and Me until now, and I'm absolutely thrilled to announce that I'm joined by Dave Marege. This guy is a genius, a really funny, great guy that you need to go and check out his work. He's got a number of stand-up shows you can go and see, a number of shows. Just search on Google and check some of his work out. But today we get to focus on his acting career and one of his finest moments in a brand new film called Sometimes I Think About Dying. It's an absolutely incredible film, one of the best that I've seen, and right now it's in cinemas across the UK. It's also starring Daisy Ridley, and honestly, I think it's one of the best films you're going to see this year. I will never go into detail and tell you all about what happens on a film, but it's blown me away. Rachel Lambert, the director, is absolutely fantastic. Dave in this film is just unbelievable. And as always, Daisy is a star in herself. It's just great. But I think the best thing to do right now is to get straight to today's episode. So, here's me and Dave talking all things TV, comedy and film. So Dave, thanks for joining me today on the Mark and Me podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Dave, what I love to do with all guests that come on the show is take it right back to the very start of your career. I'm talking about when you were growing up. Did you know what you wanted to be at a young age? Were you a kid that loved films or TV or comedy? Because obviously your path has led in a few different directions. So I was wondering where it all started for you.
I think stand-up for sure. I remember, I think I was 14. I told my best friend at the time, I was like, I wanted to be a stand-up comic. I had, my uncle had showed us, me and my cousin and my sister, like Richard Pryor and George Carlin and Eddie Murphy and Andrew Dice Clay, like video tapes,
VHS,
I guess.
Yeah.
VHS. But part of me also, because my dad, you know, he was big into soccer and he played soccer. I think at some point I was like, oh, maybe I'll do soccer. But then I realized, I was like, no, I'm not that good for that kind of level. And I think when I was little, I wanted to be a garbage person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You haven't done that. Yeah.
I had a friend who was a garbage person I got older, and yeah, it was a lot. It's a lot of work. It was 14 where I was like, I wanted to do stand up. And I think around then I got a little bit older, like maybe like 19, 20. And I was like, oh, I want to do stand up and then acting, like hoping stand up would lead me to acting.
So kind of, I don't know your full background, obviously you can read online so much, but I'm intrigued that obviously you had some incredible foundations watching those amazing comedians as a young age. Did you set yourself a goal, like one day you wanted to have your own stand-up show, or you wanted to be on a certain TV show or play a certain venue? Was there any kind of goals you set yourself?
Yeah, I think like, you know, Richard Pryor was the biggest influence. So I just really wanted to kind of do a comedy special, and then just also watching like Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence and Chris Tucker, like how they, you know, they had comedic chops and then they started to do film. That's kind of where, you know, I was like, oh, I hope I could do that as well, to be in a movie. And then, you know, to have my own TV show was an aspiration as well.
What were your family like as a supportive network? Were they kind of like, son, you're not going to make it in this industry, it's tough? Or were they like, yeah, fucking hell, we're gonna support you and root for you the whole journey?
You know, I grew up in a, you know, Lebanese family, and you know, sometimes, you know, the stereotypes, I don't know how like doctor or lawyer, yeah, things like that. But my parents, you know, my mom was like super cool about it. She was just like, if that's what you love, pursue it, but just get me a college education. She's like, at first I was like, I knew I wanted to do comedy and acting. So I was like, why? But, you know, I'm glad I did it. I graduated from college in Canada and, you know, taught me discipline, but they are super supportive. They're always coming to shows. Anytime I'm back home, and I'm putting on a show in that, and that's in my, in the city I grew up, they're always there. Like, you know, they try to, you know, they'll get like, not mad, but they'll be like, oh, you didn't, you know, I want to go. So it's always the enthusiasm is there from the beginning. So it helped a lot having that support.
Did you find it hard to make a name for yourself in an industry that's so popular, that's got so many people wanting to kind of be seen and be heard? Did you feel like it was a challenge, or did you think you were in the right place at the right time?
I think, yeah, for sure. I knew it was a very difficult place, you know, to get known or to do anything. I knew that, but I just had this, you know, it's part, like, part of me was not delusion. I mean, you have to have some sense of delusion, I feel
Yeah.
like some, I don't know how much percentage of it, but I just always, and I would just be like, I don't want to do anything else. I think that was a drive too. Like I had, like, you know, I could do other things, but I was like, nah, I'm really fixated on this and I don't want to do anything else. So it was like a combo of both that kind of probably kept me in longer with all those obstacles.
I kind of think that really helps. So I've been speaking to a lot of different people from different walks of life, and I think sometimes you have to convince yourself that there's only one path. I think if you tell yourself, oh, I can do that, but if not, I'll fall back and I'll work in a subway or a shop or something,
Yeah.
you're kind of giving yourself that kind of easy get out straight away. I think you've got to be really like, this is all I'm ever going to do, and this is all I'm going to fucking do, because I'm never going to go and work in a job 9 to 5. I have to do this, it's in my blood.
I think you're right on that too. It's like I and that was a thing where I you know told myself that repeated amount of times.
And it worked, man.
I thank God. Thank God.
Did you have anything to fall back on? I know I can sound like a hypocrite now if you did, but was there a plan B?
No, I mean, I would always like, I like clothes, you know, as I got way older. I like fashion, so that, you know, I would always, you know, maybe, you know, I'm like, I'll open up a store, but no, I really love this. Yeah, now it's like not too late, but it's just like I'm really in it.
Is there kind of, obviously you spoke about some absolute legends today that have then taken that transition into film or TV. At what point did you get that kind of itch? I know you said that the bigger picture would be that you started as a comedian and hopefully it would open some
Yeah.
doors, but at what point was it you started to think, I'm ready now, this is, I don't just want to do comedy?
I think probably, I know maybe in a, not in the beginning, but like I was just like, I just had this, I guess I just didn't know any better. I could have probably took class acting classes really early on. I just in my head had this journey where I was like, no, get your stand up together. So I was, that took me over 10 years. And then once you have that, like somebody maybe will see you. Like that's how I thought. Like I just, you know, I was like, somebody will see your comedy act and they'll place you in a film. Like, you know,
It's that
I could,
easy, yeah.
yeah, just in my head, I thought it was that easy, which is not true and wild. But I took classes here and there, but it was like I always had that itch. I always wanted, I always, yeah, felt like that it was a driving force. Like I always felt like, you know, there was not an urgency, but I was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to act in TV and film. I'm like, that's what I want to do.
So obviously at the moment you're promoting the film Sometimes I Think About Dying, and I'd love to know, as if I know absolutely nothing, how this came about. So it's a big role, it's with a
Yeah.
great cast, a great director. It's probably a dream to be involved in such a great project, especially with Rachel Lambert. So I was wondering how this actually came about for you.
I was in, you know, I frequent Canada a lot because I'm originally from there, but for work, stand up and TV there. So I think I was back to like film a Canadian comedy special that I shot 2 years ago, I want to say. And I was back trying to, you know, at the time COVID was still, you know, COVID was still, and I don't think we could perform indoors just yet. I'm trying to remember. So I just knew someone, bar owner that, you know, I could run my set, you know, to prepare for this set that I'm going to film in Montreal. And I had messaged my agents saying like, about like, hey, if you guys send like self tapes or something like that, I just want to focus on my, this special. But if something important, let me know. This was like in the morning. And then by the afternoon, I was driving with a friend of mine who's also a performer who's going to do the show. And I got an email that's an offer to do this film, which I didn't, I don't know, I don't get offers, you know, that a lot, or I don't even remember if I ever had. So I thought they got the wrong. I'm like, is this for me? Like in my head, I was like, I don't even know. Like it was just, I didn't even understand the language because I was like, this can't be, is this? And then I showed my buddy who was driving and he saw, you know, it said Daisy Ridley's name. And we both, you know, he's a, you know, big Star Wars fan and I would go with him to watch. So we were tripped out. He was like, bro, that's Ridley. The car, I don't even, I'm thankful he didn't like crash the car because he was so excited. And then he parked and I just started kind of like, I guess like not, yeah, crying because I was like, that can't be, because there's always something I wanted to do. And then Rachel Lambert had written a letter in an email saying, you know, describing, you know, just saying that she didn't, she saw me on this TV show I did called Rami, and she didn't know if I was an actor. She thought they got me off the streets of New Jersey. It's just beautiful how she broke it down. And she went and looked me up. And it was just very, very sincere and very beautiful words and kind. So that's how it all came about.
It must have not felt real. It must have been like pinch me. What the fuck?
Wasn't a, yeah, I was like, I just kept trying not to, I mean, I couldn't really tell any. I would tell my friends, my close friends, but I was so tripped out. It was very, very surreal. It's still what, I mean, even when I think about it now, it's always like a surreal thing because it's like something I wanted to do, but then it came about. It was just such a
So,
dream.
what's it like when it actually becomes reality? You're learning the script, you're looking at the screenplay and everything else to go with it. I'm sure you're having meetings with Rachel, getting a
Yeah.
lot more ideas of the character. What's it like when it's actually reality and, like, right, day one on set, you turn up. Did you feel a bit like imposter syndrome? You're like,
Oh yeah.
fucking hell, like, this is crazy.
I mean, when I zoomed with Rachel, I felt we hit it off right away. So that was great. That
Yeah.
was comfort there. And then in my head, I mean, I just immediately got to work because I was so nervous and I'm probably imposter syndrome as well. I was scared. So I, you know, hired an acting coach. So we would run certain scenes. I asked all my more skilled like experienced actor friends to give me, you know, I was like,
Give
what's
me
your
all your
opinion?
advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got like there was a lot of sticky notes on walls of hotels and Airbnbs because I was like traveling and I don't, in my head, I was like, oh, Daisy Ridley's like a normal, she's a normal person. Like just in my head, I was like trying to train myself so I wouldn't be super nervous. And I saw her the first day on wardrobe and it just kind of, it didn't work. I was like, oh, like I was, you know, I was like, and I think she was like, you didn't really laugh or, you know, you were quiet. I was like, yeah, because I didn't tell her at the time, but I was like, I was super nervous to be around her. And then, she just made it comfortable as we went by. The whole cast was super comfortable, but there was a lot of imposter syndrome, I'll tell you that. There was a lot of that for me
Were
personally.
you like, Daisy, you're Rey? Like, I want to ask you so many questions about Star Wars. My friends have got lists of questions, but at the same time, I have to be professional.
I mean, my buddy, the guy that I was telling you about, would joke with me and be like, yo, you should ask her this or do that. So there was a lot of that
Can you get
beforehand.
photos of a lightsaber for me? Steal the lightsaber.
Yeah, so it was but I had like yeah I thought I wasn't good for a lot of like I would just have that kind of you know imposter syndrome where I was like it. And then you know but Rachel worked with me and the producer Alex they were and Daisy herself just made it more comfortable and helpful. I think they sensed it a bit I think but like their guidance and how they responded was helped, where I was put at ease.
I was going to say, how do you kind of, while you're there, train your mindset to be confident instantly? Because obviously it's going to affect the take, it's going to affect your performance if you're going in there thinking, I'm not good enough for this, I shouldn't be here. But at the same time, you want it more than anything. I don't know how you kind of tell yourself mentally, I
That's a
need to
good
really
question.
up my game, you know?
That's a good question. I think, stand up helped in a sense because I would do that with stand up. There'll be moments where you get super nervous or before a show and you just have to lock in where you're
Yeah.
like, oh, that kind of helped. But then a lot of times I would just like sit in that fear or that, that, or I even thought like after a take, I go, man, was that good? So it would be, I would still like live in it. And again, I think as it went by, as I was filming, I think I built confidence throughout. And then I think by the end, I was like, oh man, I'm ready now. And they were like, oh, it's
As
done. It's
it's
done.
on the wrap party, I think I've got my confidence now. I'm ready.
I
Can we do
got
it
my
all? Can we
confidence
do it
back.
all again, Rachel? Is that all right? Did you get a
I think
chance
I
to
got
watch
it.
back your performance each day? I've worked with a few different film directors, and I see some people are very secretive and don't really want you to see any of your performance back until near the end. Or were you able to kind of shoot a scene
Oh,
and then see it back?
I didn't see it back at all. I was like,
Oh,
for,
wow.
probably for me, thank God. Would have probably
Yeah.
got in my head even more. So I didn't really see any of the scenes. I remember I talked to the PAs. I was like, yo, am I doing it? No, I think they were like, hey, good job. I go, for real? Like, I think I was like, and
You're just
they
being
looked at me.
kind, yeah.
Yeah, they looked at me crazy. They're like, why is this guy just asking us? So, but yeah, it was such a great crew too, as well. That's what made it fun as well. It felt like a family.
I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but what was the kind of biggest challenge on set?
I think it was not getting in my own way. That was the biggest challenge. It was like
Yeah.
not letting my anxieties, run loose. That was the biggest challenge for me.
It's so much easier said than done as well, isn't it? Because you've got to kind of cage them and control them to not let them kind of overpower you, and that's not easy when you're in real time.
No. And it was a lot of times at the Airbnb, I had to like talk myself and a lot of phone calls to friends who were back, just to be have advice and have comfort. So it was like a team effort, even if they didn't know they were part of the team.
Does it give you a taste now to just want to do so much more? You kind of feel like I've ticked this big one off. I want to now do more comedy or more or romantic films, or you're like, I want to do an action film. Is there kind of a list of what you want to get done?
Yeah, there was yeah that it was like play different roles. I just like the idea of like building the character or just going away and leaving for 2 3 months and living in this world. I think that interests me a lot. So it's like yeah, whatever next role hopefully I could want to do and different styles as well is interesting.
What about the kind of directing side as well? I mean, obviously seeing Rachel work, does it make you think one day I want to get behind the camera as well? You seem like a creative person that has lots of ideas and lots of ambition.
I mean, no, maybe I'm not, maybe, but nothing close, nothing in the,
Not yet,
not
yeah.
yet, because I was like, I yeah, it looks like, yeah, I have a, my, my friend Rami Yusuf, he's the star of Rami and he directs a lot. And I saw that, how I would watch and it was just very inspiring. I was like, oh man, how he's, directing, acting and it I just pictured I was like, oh, if I were to ever to do something like that, I think it'll just be some time from now. Like, do you know what I mean? It's not like it was not like a yeah, I just feel it's hard.
There's a lot more on your acting list as well, I'm sure you want to tick off before you look at the other side. Can you talk about anything at the moment? Are you looking at scripts? Are you looking at stories? Or have your agents reaching out to anyone? Is there anything in the pipeline?
Yeah, they've done. I think we're trying to build something, a TV show idea I have with two other individuals that we're trying to that we've like finished the pitch document and we're just going to start pitching it probably this month to try to like a sitcom, co a comedy, to try to get that going. So me and
That's
two other,
exciting.
yeah, it's like something I've been trying to do for a long time and can't not in Canada, but just to get a TV show of my own. So hopefully that could take off.
Is it kind of challenging to switch that kind of comedian actor? I know they can be quite similar, but is it quite hard to think, Right now, I need to completely change my mindset and my work ethic and be that stand-up comedian now, and then I'll put the acting part away for a bit.
I think the comedy part kind of feels more comfortable because I've been doing it a long time. So I just kind of like it's just it feels like it's there's a lot of familiarity to it. With acting, I'm still like working on it. So I think like the switch back to stand up just feels like, oh, I've been doing this for a while now. So it's a little bit I wouldn't say easy, but just like a little bit more comforting.
I have a
That
lot of
pocket.
people that listen. Yeah, I have a lot of people that listen to this podcast, and they message in or they DM and they say that they are trying themselves to get into the world of acting. Or I haven't had many comedians actually, but I've had a lot of people that want to know how to kind of be seen and get your name out there. I know you're obviously in the same stage and still wanting to take on bigger roles and do a lot more
Yeah.
acting work, but is there any advice you can give to anyone that's maybe at film school or thinking about further education within this industry to kind of stand above the rest or get your work seen, or any advice that people could take
Yeah.
on board?
I mean, they're in a great place now with technology, right? And social media. Like I grew I not grew up, I mean, yeah, I did grow up, but like I was in the I started in the industry when that wasn't there because I'm in my 40s, so I understand, but the tools that we didn't have to the tools that you have now. So I would say like create your own stuff. That's a big thing too, like creating your own short film or film, and you have all like you have these iPhones, as you know, are wild.
Yeah, it is mad. You can do absolutely everything now, like at the cost
Yeah.
of like £20.
Yeah. So back then there wasn't like you'd have to go get a crew and so I think that would be my advice. Just create now. You have the chance. You have the technology. You have the internet. You have social media. So if you really want it, I think you can just go do it. Obviously, and if you want to star in your film or you want to make your short your film, you can do it now. And that's what I think. Just putting yourself out there as much as you can helps so much.
What I do on the podcast, what I try and do to make it as original as I can, even though there's over 300 episodes, is every guest that comes on gets to choose the last piece of music that's played. So after today's interview is all edited and the world's ready to listen to it, you can have any song by any artist or any band or any musician played. And I wondered, I am putting you on the spot more than ever now, but what's the one that came to your head when I asked?
Oh, Frank Ocean. Frank Ocean's, hold on. That came, yeah. As you were even saying it, I just thought Frank Ocean. Self-control.
Amazing. Is there a reason that one came to
Self-control.
your?
It's actually self-control, or I would even say Nights is a good one, or self-control and Godspeed.
Yeah.
Just I mean, the whole album, I play that whole album so many times. I think it just was like just so creative. And I don't know how to explain it, just a feeling it gave too. And I remember for the film, Moon River? There's a song I didn't even know, like a girl that I used to date. She sent me this song, Frank Ocean, and he did a cover of Moon River. I didn't know it was a
Yeah.
cover, I thought it was his original. But then I remember talking with Rachel about music for the film, and it was they used the original person who did Moon River, I believe.
Right.
And then I was thinking like because the relationship I had with the girl, it was kind of like we both, trying to communicate and be vulnerable was a little bit tough. And I think I used that as a example to help with the character Robert and Fran. So I think the song and Frank, the music all kind of like was an influence. So that's when you were saying it. And I've always loved Frank's type of mood and just this album specifically, Blonde. I just love everything about him. So that right when you were talking about music, it just popped. I was like, that was it right there.
I feel guilty, but I've not listened to a lot of Frank Ocean. Obviously, the singles that you hear on Spotify, they're always in people's playlists, but I've never really dived deep into many albums. So maybe I'll spend tonight editing this and listening to some of his albums in their entirety.
Yeah, I would say Blonde and Channel Orange, those are the two. I mean, there's a third one that was only available on like as a video. So
Right.
that it yeah, so it's Channel Orange and then Blonde.
Amazing. For people that are listening right now, what's the best way to check you out? Obviously, I know everyone loves Instagram and Twitter and everything else, but is there ways for people to see your work that you're really proud of to send their way?
100%. I mean, you could watch Rami season 1 to 3, out. That's already out. If you go to YouTube and just put in Dave Merhege, I have a comedy special on there. That's actually two, and then Netflix, Comedians of the World. I have a segment on there, which I was part of Canada, and then stream anything on Apple that there's comedy there. And watch Sometimes I Think About Dying. For sure.
Yeah,
Watch
that's the
Sometimes I
big one.
Think
Make
About
sure you
Dying.
stream that as
Make sure you
soon as
go to the
possible.
theaters and watch it as soon as possible. April 19th.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time
Thank
today.
you.
Genuinely, it's a pleasure. And in the future, you're always welcome back. I have guests on this podcast like Alex Winter, Neil Blomkamp that have been on. We've talked. We've hit it off, and then a couple of years later, the world brings us back together, and now they're like on their third or fourth appearance. So you're always welcome back if you want to come
Oh
on when you've
man,
got something new to talk about.
that warms my heart. I really had a good time. I really had a good time.
Good luck with the rest of the press. I'll be making sure I tell out. I've been lucky enough to see the film. You get like an advanced screener, so I've been lucky
Yeah.
enough to see it before we chatted. Truly, dude, and I mean this, and I'll leave this on the episode. What I love about doing this podcast is I don't get forced to do certain guests. I don't get people to tell, look, you have to do this. So I get quite to be quite selective. And after seeing the film, it was an absolute honor to have you on. I genuinely thought
Oh.
that everyone in the whole film was absolutely fantastic. There was no kind of
Oh,
weak
thank
link.
you.
Rachel's vision and the way that her I don't want to spoil anything about the film, but her vision, let's just say that for now, is absolutely sensational. And I think she's going to go so far. Daisy's already made a name for herself in the industry,
Yeah.
but you're there, dude. You're well on your way, and
Oh,
sometimes you
thank
think
you.
people kind of take a step into another world, and you think, ah, oh, you know, I love Corey Feldman, but he shouldn't be singing on stage. You know, like he, you know, he's a great guy, but keep your eggs in one basket. But I'm glad you've,
What a
you know.
choice. Yeah, what a choice. What a example. That was hilarious. That's hilarious.
But genuinely, dude, you were fucking awesome, and I mean that. And
Oh, thank you.
this film is great. So I hope loads of people listen to this and then go and check it out.
I hope too, man. It truly is such a dream to be able to, and being received that way where I didn't mess it up and I gave the best performance I could give. So I'm very proud.
Yeah, believe in yourself, man. It's fucking sensational.
Thank you so much, man.
Awesome. Good luck with the rest of the press, and we will speak again one day.
Yes, thank you again.
Take care. So there's my interview with me and Dave Mirege. How great was he? So funny, so much energy, so much passion, but also so humble. He's had a great career already, but with his acting, I think he's only just starting to make a name for himself. And he's going to be one of those people that we talk about for many years. Just watch his performance in this film, and honestly, you'll be blown away. I love how we clicked as well on this interview. It felt like I'd known him all my life. And I really do believe, like I did with Neil Blomkamp and Neil Marshall and Dustin from Thrice, that he'll be back on this podcast two or three times. I can't wait to see where his career takes him, and I hope he documents it on the Mark and Me podcast. I'd just like to say now, again, I say this on each and every episode, but if you've enjoyed today's interview with me and Dave, why not share it? It really costs you no money at all. All you have to do is click a button. So if you go on to markandme.com and then click the Facebook link, hit that share button. If you're on Twitter or whatever it's called this week, hit the little heart or retweet it. Or if you're on Instagram, hit that heart button again or put it as part of your stories. I do see each and every single one of you that do this, and I thank you all personally because honestly, it's absolutely amazing. And this support is something that money can't buy. I am an individual one-man independent podcaster. I don't have this budget to spend on all these like sponsored posts and all this stuff. I just can't be doing with all that. I would rather go out there and work hard and hope that word of mouth is enough. And until now, it has been. So please, if you've enjoyed today's episode, share, share, share. And if you want to go that little extra mile, I do have a Patreon account. So if you want to hear a bit more of these episodes that aren't out there for everybody, also get a welcome pack, get some stickers, an exclusive badge, and a newsletter each and every month, then just basically go on markandme.com and hit that little Patreon button. I know times are hard, but it's literally £1 a month. And you might not think that's much, but for the podcast, it goes a long way in paying the bills for hosting the podcast on all these different directories and basically me traveling the country to sit down with guests and interview them for you guys back at home. I'll be back as always in a few days' time with another brand new episode. So until then, please look after yourself, take care, and I'll speak to you all very soon. Poolside convo about your summer last night. Ooh, yeah. About your summer last night. I give you no play. Could I make it shy last night? Could I make it shy on the last night? Could we make it in? Do we have time? I'll be the boyfriend in your wet dreams tonight. Noses on a rail. Little virgin wears the white. You cut your hair, but you used to live a blinded life. Wish I was there, wish we'd grown up on the same advice. And our time was right. Keep a place for me. Some nights you dance with tears in your eyes. I came to visit, cause you see me like a UFO. That's like never. Cause I made you your self-control. Between y'all, it's nothing. Keep a place for me. It's nothing, it's nothing. It's nothing, it's nothing. Some summertime, give up just a night.